am so excited to have Taylor with me today. Taylor is the founder of the Beautiful Foundation, a Canadian charity that provides confidence programs and mental wellness workshops for female and non-binary children and youth nationwide. To date, the foundation has directly impacted over 4,800 girls and has over 450 volunteer mentors. As well, Taylor founded the Roster Clothing Co., a clothing line that donates proceeds back to the Beautiful Foundation and is now carried in over 50 stores across North America. Outside of her work with Beautiful and Roster, Taylor also has extensive experience in the film and fashion industries across more than 7 countries, including France, Hong Kong, and Singapore, allowing her to foster connections with clients and communities around the world. Taylor, I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me. It's an honor.
Yes, absolutely. So tell me all about starting Beautiful at 17. What propelled you to get into this work, especially at such a young age?
I've been at this for well over a decade, and I always, you know, take the time to reflect back on the journey. It's been a long one, but so fulfilling in different ways. But, you know, starting at 17, I think had its advantages and disadvantages, but all started of passion, which to me is kind of the root of any project that I hope to get my hands on. But I had experienced cyberbullying when I was in grade 8. Was so lucky to have supportive parents who helped work through that with me, but also it was during a time when there was no resources really out there for kids about cyberbullying and cybersecurity, cyber safety. And I'm talking, this was on a flip phone. So like, you know, a heavy brick that was in my pocket and there was no apps. There wasn't an iPhone concept even. It was, you know, really just like anonymous text messages from a student in my school that was sending threats to me and really trying to tear down my self-esteem. And I didn't know how to navigate that, you know, 12 years old, you're kind of just trying to figure out who you are, yet alone how to now deal with these outside negativities coming in. And so was really lucky again that I had parents to help me through that, but realized there was a lack maybe in our education system of this type of education in general. And so fast forward 2 to 3 years, just noticed patterns amongst my friends. So whether it was eating disorders or extreme amounts of stress that my friends were facing, myself included, I'm really having this social pressure to like be perfect and to show up in all the spaces and have everything together all the time. And it was exhausting. And I started talking openly, you know, about it with my peers and realized I wasn't the only one feeling this way. And when my one friend shared with me that, you know, her eating challenges had started when she was in grade 3, that to me was like a huge awakening moment of, okay, it's actually not even high school that we need to be tackling these subjects. It's earlier. It's with like young kids who are 7, 8, 9, 10. And so that's kind of what inspired the Beautiful program. I created a 6-week program that final year in high school, and it was all developed around confidence, self-esteem, media literacy, body positivity, goal setting, all the things that I think should be taught mandatory in school, but were not at the time at least. And hosted my first program at the local elementary school in my neighborhood and fell totally in love with female empowerment, mentorship, and this idea that I could, at 17 years old, make an impact in someone's life. And by running that program, I walked out forever changed as well. And so these 10-year-olds had also impacted me. And so I saw this great opportunity for a full circle moment. And I knew pretty quickly that that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Amazing. Yeah. And I think that, like you said, building something out of that initial passion is so important. I love what you said about the kids inspiring you as well, because when I volunteered with Beautiful, I found I left so impacted by the stories I heard from the kids and just where they are at. I feel like it brings you back to that age too.
It like grounds you.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And then as well, what moments have been the most impactful or rewarding to you throughout your work with Beautiful?
So many different things. I mean, it's largely shaped how I show up in the world. I find like every day for me is I have a lot of joy, and so much of that comes from my work. And so I have so much gratitude that I love my job, but the humans I get to surround myself with are not only little ones, you know, we work with 8 to 14-year-olds, but also grown women who are wanting to give back and have a story to share. And so I leave always feeling inspired at the end of the day. So to me, my work thankfully is so fulfilling. But I think through the last, you know, 13 years that I've been doing this, it's also just put perspective on what's really important. So I think even as a child, I was so caught up in, again, being this perfect person, whatever that concept even was to me at the time. But I've learned over the years just to really let things go and accept that actually so much is out of our control as human beings. And so whether it's like family orientated, job orientated, you know, just life in general, so much of it, like, you just can't take for granted. And so if you learn just to, I think, accept that things happen for a reason and life is too short to sweat the small stuff. My mom used to always tell me that, but it's true. It's, you know, don't get so wrapped up in this idea of checking all the boxes all the time. And then you'll find that you naturally start to check them just when you are present and you do a little bit more of the things that you love and spend more time with the people you love. And I think spending a lot of time with kids has reminded me of that, because this concept of play and curiosity, we lose it a lot as adults. And I think especially as women,
yeah,
in the corporate world, I see it a lot. And I think we're fighting to stay at the top of so many things right now, and rightfully so. We deserve to be in those spaces, specifically, you know, in our job titles, but then, you know, you sacrifice other things. So I think for me, it's really helped me find the balance of, like, I don't need to be, you know, at the top all the time to feel at my top. Mm-hmm. I actually find sometimes me at my slowest pace is when I thrive the best.
Yeah. And how are you cultivating that balance in your life, do you find?
Trial and error. You know, I think I'm still trying to figure it out, the balance piece, but definitely surrounding myself with people that I love. And I don't need a lot of sleep. And so I've noticed this works in my benefit. I mean, I don't have kids yet. So yeah, I feel like this is going to change eventually, I'm sure, with my energy levels. But at the moment, you know, I feel like I have a lot of energy to give. And so not needing a ton of sleep allows me to actually, like, work kind of this insane work schedule, but then also have so much time for that, like, concept of play, whether that's social events or being active in my community, being active at the gym, even, like, it's small things that I'm trying to implement every day to, like, reset myself. And that's going to look different for everyone. But for me, I find the more stimulated I can be and, like, moving my body as much as, like, I'm moving my brain, that's kind of what fulfills me the most, to find that balance.
Yeah, love that. Speaking of community and being involved with your community, what role do community partnerships play in the success of Beautiful, and how do you go about forming those partnerships?
Oh, partnerships for us is everything. That's mostly my role at the moment as executive director. A lot of it is, yes, the nitty-gritty stuff. I'm still on the accounting, I'm still on the grant writing, all the things that, you know, we're wearing multiple hats at our organization right now just because we're small but mighty. But definitely partnerships, and specifically, like, community organizations that are doing similar work as well, are actually a huge benefit for us. If we can partner up with another organization that's reaching at-risk youth, or we're going to schools and working with those districts to really impact kids in the area, that to us has been instrumental for our impact numbers. And then from a financial perspective, I mean, we couldn't do what we do without community partners supporting us. So whether that's through grants, donations, you name it, we rely very heavily on people within our own neighborhoods tuning in and being like, oh yeah, the Beautiful Foundation, that's something my kid went to, that's something, you know, my daughter volunteers at, that's something I now volunteer at. And so it's trying to really make sure the community is invested in multiple ways. So not just by making a financial donation, we'd love the roots to go deeper. Can you enroll your child? Can you have your staff volunteer? Because then I think people see the impact, you know, and it's a big world of not-for-profits out there. So we're all fighting for very limited dollars. And so my angle is always, maybe it's not dollars, maybe it's time, or maybe it's you literally just say our name in the right room, and that's, like, all we ask. So for us, it's like connection over anything.
Yes, definitely. And so in addition to Beautiful, you also have the Roster clothing company. So yes. How did that all begin?
Okay, so the Roster, okay, I really have a thing with one-time projects that don't turn into just being one time, but same concept, you know, it was supposed to be basically a t-shirt campaign. Like, there's no other way to say it. It was like, okay, how are we gonna raise funds for Beautiful? We weren't a charity yet. I was, like, banging my head against the door because I wasn't getting enough funding in for our programs, and our requests for impact was increasing from parents, from schools, but the funding wasn't coming through the door. And I learned pretty quickly that everybody loves that tax receipt, which, you know, rightfully so, but we didn't have that capacity yet. We hadn't applied to get charity status, and so we couldn't issue a tax receipt. We couldn't apply for, because of that, so many grants. And so we were pretty limited at the time. But again, I knew I wanted to continue building this somehow. And I had been studying at uni remotely because I was living in Asia at the time. I'd always loved fashion. I had been working also in the fashion world for kind of the last 3 or 4 years before I started the brand. So I'd made connections in the industry and it all just kind of like fell into alignment. I was like, okay, you know, I want to make a shirt. I'm living in Asia. So many resources around me from a manufacturing level. And so teamed up with a local manufacturer there. It was specifically, this one was in Singapore and where I was living at the time. And I just lucked out with, I designed a shirt that was the right fit, the right fabric. I had the intention of every single thought was like, would my mom wear this? And I say that because she's one of the most fashionable people I know, but also would it fit her body and make her feel confident? You know, the way that it made me feel confident, because some of the tops that I wear aren't her, she would never wear a crop top, or maybe she doesn't feel comfortable in something that tight. And so I always had to think like, would my mom put this on and feel great? And as soon as I landed on a style where I felt great and she felt great and everyone loved the fabric, it was like I'd kind of just landed on the ideal product to sell. And then we added a little quote over the shoulder and it was just like a word of empowerment, but it wasn't branded right across the chest. It was super subtle. And so people loved, they could wear it to the office. It had a special touch to it. People would ask you in the grocery store lineup, what does your t-shirt say? And so it kind of sparked this mini campaign. I gathered a bunch of influencers and we launched this shirt and we sold out within like a week. And people were like, okay, I'll be on the wait list for your next product. Just let me know. And I was like, okay, yeah, let me get back to you on that. And I kind of just started being like, okay, well, maybe it becomes something more. And so we came up with like 2 t-shirts. And then a long sleeve and 2 t-shirts and then a sweater. And I was able to source other factories kind of wherever I ended up living at the time. And built a brand around that. And so to this day, 10% still goes back to the foundation. So it continues to support Beautiful, but has been really fun to be kind of like a creative side project for me. And it's gone through its ups and downs for sure, especially through COVID and the way retail has evolved. And, you know, we used to be mostly wholesale and in small boutiques, and that's largely what got hit the hardest during COVID. And so we really had to pivot too as a brand, but it's been fun. It's kind of like evolved with me in a way. But I'm not sure, to be fully transparent, with what the future holds with it. I think as the charity grows, my time is becoming less and less available, and I know where my passion is. And so I think, the roster is going to evolve into something new eventually as well, but I'm excited to see. I'll always have a piece of it. Just at the moment, it's like trying to navigate, like you were asking me, how do you do the balance? And so trying to figure those pieces out.
Yeah, and I think that businesses are meant to evolve with us. I 100%. Feel like sometimes there's this pressure to follow your business, but I know that for Devin and I, we had a conversation of like, for so long we built Oko to fit our lives and what we wanted out of life, what we were passionate about doing. And then for a little while, like the ship started steering us, where all of a sudden we're catering everything to the business. And we had to really take a step back and be like, hey, how can we evolve this so that it's suiting ourselves, our goals, as opposed to just kind of following where the wind can take us. So I think that it's good that you are allowing it to evolve with you too.
Totally. Yeah. And I think, and you'll feel it. I think you can try to almost resist that change, especially if you are following what seems to be working, right? But I think at the end of the day, as an entrepreneur, like if it does not feel centered to you and you started it, there's something that will shift naturally or pull you back to kind of finding the why again. And you see that happening with a lot of companies right now, like really not even fully rebranding, but looking at their value systems and figuring out like, does this align? Is this the direction we want to go and why?
I know so many new clothing labels struggle with landing their line in boutiques, and with the roster being carried in over 50 stores across North America, I'm curious what strategies you found most effective for landing those stockists.
It was such a mix. I mean, again, I actually went like door-to-door route when I first started the brand because I only literally had 3 pieces in my collection. So imagine, you know, me at whatever, 23, 24, basically bringing 3 shirts to a storefront and being like, okay, this is what I got to offer. But I had story to it. And I think that's what really helped me. So many brands are popping up. And I think it's a very saturated market. So you have to know how to story your brand or your label so that people can resonate with it in some way. And what I realize is it's not going to land with everyone. And it shouldn't. Like that almost also means you're not maybe focusing and honing in enough on who your customer really is. And I kind of, for me, tapped into local boutiques that were female owned, understood the why, and were willing to kind of take a chance on like, okay, these are great fabrics. I really did believe in actually the product we made, that first line. We still carry the exact same shirts in terms of the quality, the sizing, the style, and the fabric, because people repeat buy all the time. And so again, I think I went in niche with like, this is a product that I think is going to sell. I had to really story tell beautiful to explain the why. And then as soon as one boutique got in, the second one said yes a little bit easier, because they're like, oh, you're carried there. Okay, fine. I'll take a chance for a season and see. And you know, I started off with no minimums, no commitments. I made it really approachable for stores. And so then it just becomes easier for them to digest too, because you have to look at the angle of, I grew up in a family who is in retail. So every purchase they make is a big investment, because if they're not moving it off the shelves, like as a brand, you're kind of just like, your hands off at that point. So, you know, I really made sure to build relationships with my retailers. And there's still a lot of owners I talk to that, you know, if they're in town, we'll go out for coffee. Or if I'm in their city, I'll pop into their boutique and see the brand in person on the shelves. So I definitely want to make it as personal, you know, as personal as possible. But I think for new brands trying to get in, you got to be willing to do the grind. It's not just going to be an Instagram post and the whole world's talking about it. I mean, that would be the dream, but you know, very far and few that happens too. So having a good marketing strategy, yes, having strong line sheets, a great lookbook, a good marketing team. But I was the marketing team and I was the one shooting the lookbook. So, you know, it's possible to do it with very low resources. But again, it's that you got to have the pitch. No one's going to buy into the story if you don't buy it yourself. So I think if you can master that, you know, you could sell anything.
Definitely. And I think, again, it goes back to your point of the passion. If you aren't starting with that initial passion, it's so much harder to pitch yourself. It carries true throughout everything you're saying.
Yeah. And to know it works. Like, I think of someone who might be selling something in tech. Like, I hope that you've tried the product. I hope that you've used it so you can actually understand like a user experience to then help someone buy into it with you.
And so you've also worked in over 7 countries in the fashion and film industries. So how have these international experiences influenced your perspective and work? And I know that you're building the roster through partners in these countries as well. So yeah, tell me about that whole experience.
It's really interesting because the more I take a step back to look at it, it's all so intertwined. And it feels strange to say, because when I was in it, I didn't really see the overlap, I guess. But you know, I first went into acting when I was, I think, 15 or 16 was my first audition. Vancouver was just starting to become the North Hollywood, they called it. And so always thought that that was something. I loved theater growing up. I was the kid singing musicals all the time, not well at all, but you know, I was there on stage, had no fear, public speaking, totally okay. So yeah, acting just seemed like the natural thing to kind of try out, and landed a few small things in Vancouver, loved it. And then I ended up booking a commercial that was quite a large campaign, and it was shot in Prague, but it was actually for all of Asia. And I had always been told, you're too short to model. There's not a chance you'll ever be able to do it. Like, forget about it. Fashion is like totally out of reach for you. So that kind of pushed me more towards the acting route. But then landing this commercial also came with doing a full photo shoot, because it was the full campaign for a beauty product at the time. And it was that one campaign that got my face onto the billboards, and suddenly every human that was like, nope, you'll never be able to do this, was like, okay, we'll sign you. Yep, we'll sign you. We'll fly you out. Come and work for us. So it really did for me just kind of take one campaign to see that it was possible to like have a career in fashion. I definitely didn't think it would, talking to you today, I would still have a career in fashion. Back then it was, you know, so many height requirements, which still do exist to an extent today, but I feel like I've kind of broken that barrier a little bit. You know, I'm only 5'6", and I've been able to work for brands that, you know, I never could have imagined would work with me. So I've been super grateful through that. But also I've seen just like diversity change in the fashion industry, which has been great. So, you know, embracing what is seen as imperfections, let's say. But, you know, when I first started, freckles weren't a cool thing to have. And so they always used to tell me to not go in the sun and to wear extra makeup on set and all this stuff. And now it's so embraced. And a lot of the work I do is actually like shot very stripped down and natural. But yeah, working in Asia was a wild ride. And that first campaign is what launched me. I first landed in Bangkok. And then the next 5 years, I jumped between the Philippines, Thailand, Singapore, Hong Kong, and just loved every second of it. It really, I think, hugely shaped who I am today and gave me perspective of the world in a big way and opened my eyes to, you know, what is out there and how much joy people have in the world that they kind of live in. And by open my eyes, I mean, you know, really living in third world countries helps you realize, I think, just how much privilege we have, and as simple as drinking out of our taps here in Vancouver, you know, like that's something I never was able to do when I lived over there. And, you know, families have never been able to do their whole lives. So it's just being able to like live in a different environment and be welcomed so much into the homes of people who you barely even really know, but the community and like the family values that are in some of the countries I lived in is just like, yeah, it's incredible. And so I just see so much of that in my own heritage as well. Like I'm half Chinese, so, you know, the big family dinners and everyone's invited and doors always open. Like those things are so important to me. And like living in the Philippines, it's like so normal. Every single person there is like, come on over for dinner. And, you know, I felt like everyone was family, and it's such a joy. And so I was able to, yeah, like travel, work, explore, play, also do my degree, run Beautiful. It all kind of like merged into this one really fun journey. And then when I came home to finish my degree, I started then modeling here locally in Vancouver. And that's now when I've seen maybe like the biggest synergies in even the work that I'm doing with Beautiful. So having Beautiful grow has really also like given space for these brands to take interest in what it is that I'm kind of up to and working on. And so we've done some really cool workshops with like fashion brands on kids trying to discover, you know, like where their creativity sparks, and if they could put like all their emotions and their feelings onto like a design board, what would that look like with fabrics and textures and colors? And have brands raise funds through Women's Day campaigns. There's been so many now layers where incredible people I've worked with from the fashion side have crossed over to like somehow my not-for-profit side. And I think that's only going to keep growing, because I think brands also right now want and should be attached to a social value or some type of give back, whether that's environmental or social sustainability, community, whatever it is. And so that's where Beautiful now enters in a really cool way, but definitely was never what I expected to see happen. And again, like from height to age, I was always told like, you'll max out when you're 25. No one models after that. Da 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 da. The list goes on. And I feel like I keep proving it wrong. So it's great. Yeah. And I think I don't take credit for that, but I just think like I've never take no for an answer. And I think the industry's changing. So it's great to see that, you know, there are women in their 50s that have worked more than they ever have now. And yeah, like I've heard some great stories about also just even like just to come as they are and really like, you know, not leaning into any kind of Botox or anything, because they actually want to see fine lines, and we want to have the ageless kind of beauty in the campaign in terms of just come as you are. And that's so fantastic, because this is stuff that we're teaching the young kids of just love your body that you're in. And, you know, every smile mark tells a story. And, you know, I think now finally we're seeing that transcend a bit more into the fashion industry too, which is great.
Yeah, definitely. And actually that leads into what I was going to ask you as well, is do you notice a difference in the youth that you work with in their perspective of celebrities and models and the expectations of looks with the industry changing? Or do you feel like it hasn't quite gotten there?
So tough to say, because there's two elements that come into play here that I see at least. But one is, yes, absolutely. We have a full media literacy class with kids, and we'll put up ads and show them like a Dove campaign versus another campaign, or, you know, two ads side by side, one edited, one not edited. They all are well aware of the editing that goes on. And if they're not, they come to our class and they leave very shocked about the realities of what exists. And then on the flip side, you've got this toxic environment that does exist online. And you've got kids who are on phones hours and hours a day, comparing their lives, their bodies, what they're doing, you know, with their school day, against this kind of ideal world that they are watching unfold online. And that to me is where I see the biggest kind of harm being done, is where kids' self-esteem actually is still decreasing, because as much as there's positive content out there, it's not always going to reach the kids, and they still might not be able to know the difference anyways between like, is this real, is this not? Now with AI, you're adding like a whole other level into it. But I definitely am seeing a lot more comparison of just you know, a child watching someone else's life unfold and wanting that instant gratification of, well, why does she get that and I don't? Or why don't I look like that? Or how do I look like that? And yeah, it's hard to navigate right now. And so I think for us as an organization, the best we can do is educate, right? Make sure they're aware of what's out there and how to try to spot the differences between like this kind of false reality that exists. And really just like also take in content that makes you feel good. Kids are always shocked when I say, just if I'm not feeling it today, I'll just delete the app or I'll unfollow this person. If I feel like I'm being so hard on myself, then that's on me to tune in and realize that person's doing nothing to purposely affect me. But if there's something going on deeper within myself and maybe I'm unsatisfied with something, then that's work I have to do with myself. And so I think a child needs to hear that from an older mentor who they think has it all together. And we're like, no. We all still struggle with different things. And so much of it is just being authentic for that kid to hear, okay, I'm not alone. And here are some active tools I can do to really help make sure my mindset is in the right place.
Definitely. And I think that's where the format of Beautiful having these mentors is so great, because I feel like it's so different coming from a parent or a teacher, but that, you know, woman that's just a bit older than you that you can really look up to, I feel like makes such an impact when you're that age.
For sure.
So yeah, I love that. We touched on balance a little bit earlier, but with everything that you do, I'm curious to learn a little bit more about your time management overall. What does a typical day look like? Do you have any tools or strategies that you use for time management?
The main one that I rely on seems maybe the most simple, but it's very effective for me, and that is the use of a calendar. I have to document everything, and by that, like, all my friends know and they laugh about this, but like if we're hanging out for a lunch, it's going in the calendar. If we're meeting for a coffee, even if it's not work related at all, you're getting an invite for it. And that's not for even that person to know that it's locked in. It's honestly just for me mentally to be able to look at my day. And I think because I basically have three separate businesses running at the same time, I kind of need that structure. And then the other thing I've gotten really good at over the years, and I've been able to do it because our team has grown, but it's delegating. Learning, I'm still learning, but like certain tasks are not meant to be in your hands anymore. And how do you release that and empower people to take ownership now of those roles? And so long, I think, especially because we work with minors, the struggle for me was releasing the independence of these programs running across Canada. And how, you know, in my head, I was like, oh my gosh, how could a Toronto program run and I'm not even there? How can like a program online run and I'm not tuned in to see what's happening? And then once you start finding the right people that totally understand how your brain works and the mission you want to provide and the space you want to provide for kids, then it was like game changer. Then I could actually build out a team. But delegating has really allowed me to focus on the partnerships that I need to land, on building connections with people that I maybe wouldn't have had time for before because I'd be teaching in class. Now I'm not teaching. Now I'm actually way more behind the scenes. So delegating would be the other thing, but it's tough because for the first, I want to say 6 years of Beautiful, I didn't have that. So when it's just you, you gotta find structure and organization skills in other ways, right?
Definitely. And what would you say has been the biggest challenge in your career? And what advice would you give to someone facing a similar challenge?
Biggest challenge in my career. If I'm being fully transparent, which I always am, I say that and I'm like, what am I not? I feel like I wear my heart on my sleeve. But I think because I naturally am always trying to build the next thing. I'm always trying, you know, as soon as we wrap one thing, I'm like, what's the next? How do we keep building it up? Okay, we just raised 50 grand at this fundraiser. We're raising 150 grand now at the next one. And there's no time. There's no time in between those thoughts. And I think the hardest thing for me that I struggle with at the moment, and I really realize this, is like, when do I kind of stop constantly fighting to stay afloat? That's not maybe the best term because, again, I love my job and there's so much joy I have in my day to day. So I think like staying afloat has a bad connotation because it usually means like you're just trying to like get your head above water. And that's not necessarily how I feel. But there are days where it's exhaustion. And I sometimes am like, oh, I'd love to not have to have the ownership of this entire company, maybe, you know, feeling on my shoulders. And because I'm in charge of, you know, a lot of the funding that does come in, I always am thinking about ways to be innovative on how do we make sure that my team's supported, that we're going to make the next payroll the next month. Like, I'm always trying to kind of get ahead of the game that way. But that is just, I think, comes with like the nature of the business. But I think that's always going to be my biggest struggle, actually, is learning to slow down. Because at the moment, I feel like we aren't quite big enough to do that. If I were to slow down, things would get missed. To anyone else going through their own business journey, I think take the time to slow down, to celebrate the small wins. And, you know, I remember getting like my first grant for $5,000. Yes, like this is life changing. And now when I get, if we get 5,000, sometimes like I actually find myself getting like disappointed because I'm like, why isn't it, should I applied for way more than that? But it's all relative. Like it's again, and it's going back to like, no, find the joy that still is being awarded or donated. And that can be applied to like a sale. You know, you might only have $100 worth of sales that day, but there would have been a point where that was your biggest sale, you know, yeah, that $100 charged that day, and then it became $1,000, and then maybe it's $100,000. And so I think, again, we jump so quickly to like these success markers. I think that's overrated. I think we just need to like chill out and celebrate the little wins too, because at one point those were our biggest ones.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that is so common too. I actually have a list. Like every year I make a list of small goals, big goals, things coming up. And I try to make a point of, I actually assign a celebration to them in advance.
Oh my God.
To kind of like hold myself accountable. So great. Otherwise, okay, like, you know, they just pass you by and you're...
Yeah. I should do that. Like, and yeah, it can be like helps. A small celebration.
It can be something small, yeah, okay, but it's just to have something. Yes.
I'm gonna take that up.
Yes. And I hate to ask this right after we're saying like we're always looking ahead, but what are you looking forward to right now?
Well, we have our biggest gala. Okay, sorry, our only gala coming up. Our first ever. It will be our annual event moving forward, but it is the Beautiful Foundation's spin on a gala. So it's, you know, a very curated kind of selection of women invited. It's a women's only gala too, which is kind of uncommon, but it's centered in just authentic conversations and really intimate moments. But we've got a fashion show. We've got a bunch of surprise, like live music coming through, or live performances, I should say. And it's going to be like a really magical evening. And so it's something that I've been wanting to do for a while. We've done smaller events, but nothing to this scale. And we're filling the room with really intentional people who I think just want to be there to celebrate what we're up to, but also hear more about what we're up to. So I'm very excited.
And if anyone wants to get involved with Beautiful, whether that be as a mentor, enrolling their children, or donating, sponsoring events, etc., how can they get involved?
Yes, all those opportunities are available. So thank you for listing those out, because I think each of them have their own significance in different ways. But yes, I think the easiest is go to our website. You'll see a full list of the programs we're offering, what cities we're in. And then on there, you can follow kind of the mentorship page if you're wanting to volunteer. If you want to sign up your child, you can head there as well. And then there's also like a sponsorship kind of form you can fill out if you're interested in keeping tabs on what we're up to and being a part of it in a bigger way. And Beautiful, I always say this, so it's the Beautiful Foundation, spelt a little bit differently. So it's B-E-A-Y-O-U. T-I-F-U-L. So we do a little bit of a play on words there.
Yes. Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me, Taylor.
Thank you for having me. It was so great.
Yay. Woo!